translation. O my Lord, Sri Krishna, son of Vasudev, O all-pervading personality of Godhead, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I meditate upon Lord Sri Krishna because he is the absolute truth and the primeval cause of all causes of the creation, sustenance and destruction of the manifested universes. He is directly and indirectly conscious of all manifestations, and he is independent because there is no other cause beyond him. It is he only who first imparted the Vedic knowledge unto the heart of Brahmaji, the original living being. By him, even the great sages and demigods are placed into illusion, as one is bewildered by the illusionary representations of water seen in fire or land seen on water. Only because of him do the material universes, temporarily manifested by the reactions of the three modes of nature, appear factual, although they are unreal. I therefore meditate upon him, Lord Sri Krishna, who is eternally existent in the transcendental abode, which is forever free from the illusionary representations of the material world. I meditate upon him, for he is the absolute truth. So, purport by Srila Prabhupada, and this is the fourth paragraph of the purport. In Vedic literatures, it is said that the absolute truth, personality of Godhead, is the chief among all living personalities. All living beings, beginning from the first created being Brahma, down to the smallest ant, are individual living beings. And above Brahma, there are even other living beings with individual capacities. And the personality of Godhead is also a similar living being. And he is an individual, as are the other living beings. But the Supreme Lord, or the Supreme Living Being, has the greatest intelligence, and he possesses supermost inconceivable energies of all different varieties. If a man's brain can produce a space satellite, one can very easily imagine how brains higher than man can produce similarly wonderful things which are far superior. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument, but there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. Srila Vyasadeva, however, at once accepts the Supreme Intelligence as the Parameshwara. He offers his respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Intelligence, addressed as the Para, or the Parameshwar, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that Parameshwara is Sri Krishna, as admitted in Bhagavad Gita and other scriptures delivered by Srila Vyasadeva, and specifically in the Srimad Bhagavatam. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that there is no other Paratattva, Samam Bonam, than himself. Therefore, Sri Vyasadeva at once worships the Paratattva, Sri Krishna, whose transcendental activities are described in the 10th canto. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanusuti Devi Pranamami Hari Prihe Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Shari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this purport, the fourth paragraph, I find particularly very appealing. It's just the way that Srila Prabhupada has written the purport. When I read it, it was as if the individual and personal nature of Krishna is standing out. You know? And the way Srila Prabhupada has written this purport, you know, it's almost like he did it the other way around, just to make it accessible for us. He says, you know, from Brahma down to the smallest ant are living beings. And then he says, the personality of Godhead is also a similar living being. Normally we would say the personality of God is a living being, and then we are also living beings. But Prabhupada does it the other way around. And for me, when I read this purport, I just got this feeling, you know, that Krishna is a person. You know, Krishna's got a life. And we've got access to Krishna. And I was just thinking how much this contrasts to the other philosophies, in particularly the Mayavadi philosophy. The Mayavadis, in all their interpretations, in all of their examples, in all of their purports, what are they trying to do? They're trying to decry, they're trying to minimize, they're trying to negate the personality of Godhead. Srila Prabhupada says, as an example, like the Mayavadis, they will say, Krishna is black. Black means unknown. Unknown means unknowable. Therefore, we cannot know Krishna. And Prabhupada told one story to illustrate this point, the foolishness of the Mayavadis. He said, once there was a lady, and she requested her husband to go to the market and buy a chicken, murgi. So the husband, he went to the market. And when he arrived at the market, the vendors with the chickens were saying, please buy our chickens. We've got the fattest chickens. So he thought to himself, oh, maybe fat is better than chicken. So I'll go get the best fat. So he went to the area where they were selling fat. And the vendors, they were saying, please come and buy our fat. Our fat has got the best oils. He said, oh, oils. Maybe I should get oil. So he went to the area where they were selling oil. And there the people were saying, the vendors were, please buy our oil. It's the clearest, purest, clear just like water. He said, oh, maybe water is better than oil. So he got some water and he took it to his wife. And you can imagine what her reaction was. So these are like the Mayavadis. They start off with Krishna. Krishna is black. Black means unknown. Unknown means unknowable. It's ridiculous. And Srila Prabhupada would often talk about the commentary of Dr. Radhakrishnan, where he would say, we should not surrender to the person Krishna, but we should surrender to the unknown absolute. So this is going on. And even the Buddhist philosophy, they not only make the absolute Krishna impersonal, they make him void. Completely void. And then the atheists, they go even further. There's no such thing as a God. From a personal point of view, you know, I when I was reading this verse, I was thinking to myself that if there was no such thing as a personal God, there was no Krishna, I don't think I would have any interest in spiritual life. I would rather stay here and have relationships with friends and family and people. Because the nature of the soul is that we are active. We want to engage in relationships. Once Srila Prabhupada was asked, the Mayavadis who do merge into the absolute, You say they fall down. The Brahma Jyoti is meant to be a place of bliss. So how come they fall down from the Brahma Jyoti? And Prabhupada said, because they get lonely. They get lonely. So for a devotee, the life of a devotee is to hear about and to chant and to relish the Naam, the name of Krishna, the Rupa, the form of Krishna, the Leela, the pastimes of Krishna, and to hear about the Dham, the abode of Krishna. That is the life and soul of the devotees. If that is not there, there's nothing that's worth living for. I have one favorite verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in 10th canto, chapter 31, verse number 9, where the gopis sing, Tavakatam ritam tapta jivanam kaviriditam karma safalam shravana mangalam shri matatatam bhuvi grinanti ye buridajana. So the translation of that verse, the gopis sing. They say to Krishna, the nectar of your words and the description of your activities are the life and soul of those suffering in this material world. These narrations, transmitted by learned sages, eradicate one's sinful reactions and bestow good fortune upon whoever hears them. These narrations are broadcast all over the world and are filled with spiritual power. Certainly, those who spread the message of Godhead are most munificent. So the gopis are saying, that's the life. And the devotees, that's what the devotees live for, is to discuss Krishna Katha, to hear Krishna Katha. There was a few nice stories that I heard. There was once a devotee in Vraj, in Vrindavan. He used to love to hear Krishna Katha. Whenever there was some Krishna Katha, he would sit there and he would relish. And Krishna was so pleased with his mentality that one day this devotee was sitting in a katha, absorbed in hearing about Krishna. And suddenly, he sees someone tapping his shoulder. And he looks, and who does he see? He sees Krishna. And he says, oh, obeisances, my Lord. And then he goes back to hearing Krishna Katha. And then Krishna taps him again. He said, yes, my Lord. And Krishna says, you know, I'm so pleased with you, with your desire to hear. I want to give you a benediction. Ask for something. Then the devotee turns to Krishna. He says, my Lord, you know, no offense, but this katha is so relishable. Can we discuss this some other time? And there was one story also of Hanuman. Once Hanuman went to Lord Ram, and he told Ram, Lord Ram, you know, I'm tired. I've been working very hard. I think I need a vacation. Yeah. I need to take a vacation. So Lord Ram said, yeah, sure, you can have a vacation. But tell me, Hanuman, what are you going to do on your vacation? He said, my Lord, I am going to find a place where your katha is going on very nicely, and I'm going to sit there and relish. So it's the personality of Godhead, Krishna. You know, without understanding Krishna, everything is just meaningless. And it is, we are very fortunate in our Vaishnava culture. to have the Bhakti Shastras. And you can see, even Srila Vyasadeva, you know, this very first text, what was Vyasadeva's position? Yeah? Vyasadeva had compiled all of the Vedic literatures, the four Vedas, the Upanishads, the Puranas, but he was not feeling satisfied. And in that condition, he went to Narad Muni and placed his position. And Narad was very direct to him. He said, because you have described so much in this Vedic literature, but you have not directly described the pastimes of the Lord, of the personality of Godhead. And that's when Srila Vyasadeva set out to write the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of the Lord. Once there was an interesting article in Back to Godhead magazine. It was written by Garuda Prabhu. And in this article, he speaks about a German philosopher, a very renowned German philosopher by the name of Rudolf Otto. And Rudolf Otto was very famous for his books on religion. And in this one particular book, Rudolf Otto is trying to find a religion that compares with Christianity. Because if you look at it, in one sense, you know, Christianity is one of the few religions that describe or state that there's a personal God. In Islam, Allah, one should not really contemplate Allah. Therefore, you know, you cannot have any photographs in your house. Even, apparently, there's a description that Allah is not even in paradise to where they aspire to go. So, Rudolf Otto, he went searching to see whether he could find any religion that comes close to Christianity. And then he came upon the Bhakti religion. And then in his book, he wrote something very nice about the Bhakti religion, which, where did I leave it? Yeah. In his book, India's Religion of Grace and Christianity Compared and Contrasted, he wrote this. He said, in this Indian Bhakti religion, there is presented, without doubt, a real saving God, believed, received, and can we doubt it, experienced. And this is just why this religion appears to me to have been and to be today the most astonishing competitor to be taken most seriously. And he went on further to say, yeah, we are dealing with a genuine religion and a religion of experience. Religion here is no mere fringe sentiment furnishing a border to the rest of our life, but is conceived as a true meaning of life itself. So he saw this in the Bhakti religion, and he saw this nowhere else. And he saw this as the competitor, the only competitor to Christianity. So it's wonderful that in this very first verse that Srila Vyasadeva establishes the personality of Godhead. Then Srila Prabhupada goes on to speak about the potencies of Krishna. And Prabhupada says, if a man's brain can produce a space satellite, one can very easily imagine our brains higher than man can produce similarly wonderful things which are far superior. The reasonable person will easily accept this argument, but there are stubborn atheists who would never agree. And as hard as that this may sound, this is true. Um, Devotees often quote the example of Sir Isaac Newton. Sir Isaac Newton had a friend, a fellow scientist who was an atheist. And every time Sir Isaac Newton would speak with his friend, trying to explain how wonderful it is that this world comes from God, his friend would object. Saying, no, you can't say that this world came from God. Jai Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki, Jai Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Jai Gaura Nithai, Shri Gaura Nithai Ki. He would say, no, there's no proof of God. This world has come about by natural processes. So Isaac Newton wanted to, teach his friend something. So he had a very expert craftsman make a model of the universe with all the planets, and so on. So one day, his friend came to visit him, and Isaac Newton was busy at his desk, writing, and the model was there. And when the friend walked into his room and he saw this model, he said, wow, that's amazing. Who created this model? And Isaac Newton said, nobody created it. It just happened like that. His friend, said, don't be silly. Who created this model? And Isaac, it just appeared. Nobody created it. And his friend, that's ridiculous. Someone must have created it. And then Sir Isaac Newton turned to him and said, you are so adamant that this world with all of its universes and planets and so on appeared by chance. But yet you are unwilling to accept that this model appeared by chance. And then his friend looked at him and wondered, yes. But to us it may seem that, these are all logical. And later on in the purport, I was very amazed by this. Srila Prabhupada mentions the watchmaker. And in philosophy of science, there's the example of the watchmaker, the example that was given by the Reverend William Paley. They come up with so many arguments for that. But I'm just looking at the time, I'm a bit conscious. Maybe when we have time, I'll come back to the arguments, because it's very interesting. It's very interesting to know how, besides something seeming so logical, the atheist can still say, no, there's no logic there. There's some very interesting arguments that they speak. But I want to do justice, because I've been asked to do all three purports. I want to do justice to the purports, and I'll try to read through them. So the purport to paragraph number 5. Unscrupulous persons go immediately to the 10th canto, and especially to the 5 chapters which describe the Lord's rasa dance. This portion of the Srimad Bhagavatam is the most confidential part of this great literature. Unless one is thoroughly accomplished in the transcendental knowledge of the Lord, one is sure to misunderstand the Lord's worshipable transcendental pastimes called rasa dance and his love affairs with the gopis. This subject matter is highly spiritual, and only the liberated persons who have gradually attained to the stage of Paramahamsa can transcendentally relish this rasa dance. Srila Vyasadeva therefore gives the reader the chance to gradually develop spiritual realization before actually relishing the essence of the pastimes of the Lord. Therefore, he purposefully invokes a Gayatri mantra, Dhimahi. This Gayatri mantra is meant for spiritually advanced people. When one is successful in chanting the Gayatri mantra, he can enter into the transcendental position of the Lord. One must therefore acquire Brahmanical qualities or be perfectly situated in the quality of goodness in order to chant the Gayatri mantra successfully, and then attain to the stage of transcendently realizing the Lord, his name, his fame, his qualities, and so on. So in this part of the purport, Srila Prabhupada is very strongly explaining to us the process by which we should understand Srimad Bhagavatam. We should not immediately go to the 10th canto, and in particular the Rasa Leela, as many narrators and audiences today want to do. In June of 1976, Srila Prabhupada was in Los Angeles. And while he was there, it came to his attention that there were a group of his disciples who had formed a club called the Gopi Bhava Club. And this Gopi Bhava Club, they would get together on a regular basis, and they would discuss the pastimes of Radha and Krishna from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. When Srila Prabhupada heard about this, he called for an immediate meeting. So the sannyasis were called, and the leaders of this group were called. So Prabhupada says, "What is this?" And one of the leaders said, "Prabhupada, you know, we are not trying to imitate the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Yeah? We are just trying to develop a desire for the pastimes of Radha and Krishna." And when they said that, Srila Prabhupada's lip started to quiver. And that would only happen when Srila Prabhupada became very angry. And then he said this very firm, famous statement. He said, "Deserve before you desire. Deserve before you desire." And then another of his leaders, one of the leaders of this Gopi Bhava Club, they said, but Srila Prabhupada, you know, we're just looking at your books. You know, we're not going to look at the books of the Acharyas or any Rasika Vaishnav. We're just studying Radha Krishna pastimes in your books." And Srila Prabhupada says, "You know, there's a pharmacy. And then in that pharmacy, there are many drugs. Can you just go and pick any drug? No. You need a prescription. According to your condition, you will be prescribed a drug." And Prabhupada said, in the same way, you know, your condition is such that you need to be prescribed which books. I have given everything. Everything in my books. But you have to be prescribed according to the condition of your heart. Now someone may say, "Oh, if that's so, why in chapter 32 of Krishna book does Prabhupada give the Rasa Leela? Why does Srila Prabhupada?" And we all know that Srila Prabhupada, he translated Krishna book and he had the devotees widely distribute Krishna book throughout the world. So why did Prabhupada put in chapter 32, the Rasa Leela there? Why? Because Prabhupada put that in a special prescription. If you read chapter 32, Srila Prabhupada has interweaved the narration of the Rasa Leela so nicely with philosophy that no one can misunderstand. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada is saying, "You are sure to misunderstand. You are sure to misunderstand if you read the Rasa Leela." But Prabhupada has given the chapter 32 in a way that we can't misunderstand. So Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport that we have to be pure. Our condition of our heart has to be such that we can understand, or we will misunderstand. And there's some pastimes of Srila Prabhupada. Once there was an elderly gentleman who came with his wife to Srila Prabhupada, to meet Srila Prabhupada. And they were talking about Krishna. And suddenly this Indian gentleman said, Prabhupada, so why is Krishna an adulterer? Why does he, in the middle of the night, go out and play with other men's wives? This is not so nice. Because he didn't understand. He was reading the Rasa Leela without understanding. And Srila Prabhupada said, oh, Krishna is adulterer. So he asked, who is Krishna? So this man said, Krishna is Bhagavan. So Prabhupada says, what does Bhagavan mean? He said, Bhagavan means one who everything belongs to. And Srila Prabhupada said, so who is this lady? He said, this is my wife. So who does she belong to? Then he was trapped. Then he said, to Krishna. Then Prabhupada said, so who is the adulterer? So who is the adulterer? There's another pastime with Srila Prabhupada. Once in South India, there was a couple. They were very eager to have Srila Prabhupada narrate Rasa Leela. So they said, Swamiji, can you recite Rasa Leela for us? And Prabhupada said, no. This is, you know, for very pure people, very advanced. He said, Swamiji, we are old people, we are pure. You know, we can't get contaminated with sex desire, you know. So please, recite Rasa Leela. In this way, they were insisting that Srila Prabhupada narrate Rasa Leela and how they were qualified to hear Rasa Leela. And then Prabhupada eventually said, you know what? You all may be very qualified to hear Rasa Leela, but personally, I don't think I'm qualified to narrate Rasa Leela. So in this way, Srila Prabhupada, killed this desire. And Prabhupada was very emphatic, you know, to all of his disciples. Don't try to jump. Understand our position and progress according to the condition of our heart. And then later on the purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes, Srila Prabhupada says that one has to be very qualified, and Srila Vyasadeva, wanting to really help us to come to the stage of understanding Krishna's pastimes, he invokes within this verse the Gayatri Mantra. And you can see the very last word in this verse is Dimahi. Dimahi, it means, as Prabhupada has translated in the word for word, I do meditate. And in this Gayatri Mantra is this word Dimahi. So Srila Prabhupada is, first I was wondering how Srila Prabhupada can say the Gayatri Mantra is invoked by Vyasadeva. And I went looking in the Veda base, you know, where in the Srimad Bhagavatam is this Gayatri Mantra. And actually there is no Gayatri Mantra, but there is this word Dimahi in this very first paragraph. So Srila Prabhupada or Vyasadeva is considering that this to be a very core part of, and that is the purpose of any mantra, including the Gayatri Mantra, is to bring us to the position of meditating on Lord Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada explains in one purport that this Gayatri Mantra is non-different from Krishna. And one who chants this Gayatri Mantra, he is sure, if he perfects the chanting of this Gayatri Mantra, he is sure to realize the personality of Godhead by this mantra. But the Gayatri Mantra has people have very limited access. One has to be a brahmana and one has to be a brahmana situated in the mode of goodness before one can chant this mantra. And even above that, there are hard and fast rules for chanting. You should chant 3 times a day, you know, during certain times. So, in one sense, this Gayatri mantra precludes a large section of the population. So therefore, we are most fortunate that we have got the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And in this mantra, anyone can chant, any time of the day, with no rules or restrictions. And this is the great mercy of Naam Prabhu, of the holy name of Krishna. I see we've passed 7:30. I haven't even got to the final paragraph that was, but I'd like to stick to time. Or maybe for a few minutes, I'll just at least read it. I wanted to explain or pick out some important aspects of the purport, but I think to do justice, because we won't come... Is it okay? I will read it. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam is the narration of the Swarup of the Lord, manifested by His internal potency. And this potency is distinguished from the external potency which has manifested the cosmic world, which is within our experience. Srila Vyasadeva makes a clear distinction between the two in the sloka. Srila Vyasadeva says herein that the manifested internal potency is real, whereas the external manifested energy in the form of material existence is only temporary and is illusionary, like the mirage in the desert. In the desert mirage, there is no actual water. There is only the appearance of water. Real water is somewhere else. The manifested cosmic creation appears as reality, but reality, of which this is but a shadow, is in the spiritual world. Absolute truth is in the spiritual sky, not the material sky. In the material sky, everything is relative truth. That is to say, one truth depends on something else. This cosmic creation results from interaction of the three modes of nature, and the temporary manifestations are so created as to present an illusion of reality to the bewildered mind of the conditioned soul, who appears in so many species of life, including the higher demigods like Brahma, Indra, Chandra, and so on. In actuality, there is no reality in the manifested world. There appears to be reality. However, because of the true reality which exists in the spiritual world, where the personality of Godhead eternally exists, where the personality of Godhead eternally exists with these transcendental paraphernalia. Now, this purport also is packed with so much of meaning or instruction for us. And of particular significance there, that Srila Prabhupada talks about this material world not being real. It's an illusion. But all of us sitting here, you know, this table is real, this body is real, the temple is real, the deities are real. So how is it that Srila Prabhupada is saying that this material world is not real? It's very important to understand, because that's a very significant philosophical point. But just in a very few sentences, you know, the Mayavadi's Siddhanta is that this is false. But the Vaishnava Siddhanta, or interpretation of it not being real, that it is temporary. In the 11th canto, Krishna gives a nice example. He says, we have dreams. And in our dreams, we experience so many things. But when we get up from these dreams, we don't consider it to be real. Like in our dream, we may dream that we became a millionaire. Or we may dream that a tiger is chasing us and we're being killed. But when we get up, we don't say, oh no, I was a millionaire. But now I am in this condition. We just say it's a dream. So our experiences in this material world is like that. It's like a dream. Everything is temporary. So we should not get hung up about anything really. Just like we don't get hung up about anything in a dream, we shouldn't have any hang-ups about any difficult material experiences we have. So I'll stop here.